Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry.
Grief is something that affects so many of us, yet it's not something that we talk about all that much. It's still seen as a bit of a taboo. And my guest today, Mark Lemon, is on a mission to change that. Mark is a dad of two, and tragically, when he was 12, his dad was murdered. He tells me how this affected him as a teenage boy, but also how it affects how he parents his own children today. A few years ago, after a long time of bottling up his experience, Mark started to write about his grief, and he now hosts a podcast called Grief Is My Superpower, where he talks to other people about their own experience of grief and how it shaped them as a person. He's also a bereavement ambassador for charity Winston's Wish, and he's written a book, The Magical Wood, which introduces and explores the idea of loss to children. Basically, what Mark has done is turn a tragic, life-changing experience into something positive. He's helping so many people, young and old, deal with their grief. And I'm so grateful that Mark was happy to share his story with me during our chat. A huge warm welcome to Mark Lemon. Mark, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And I've just actually checked the pronunciation of your name because I was so scared I was going to say Mark Lemon. For some reason, I've just got this like hang up about mispronouncing people's names, but it's definitely Mark Lemon, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? When you say that, it reminds me of, do you remember Mark Lamar?
Yes. Yeah. Maybe that's where it's coming from.
I think it might be.
The surname Lemon is... Lemon.
Lemon. Okay.
Your surname.
It's my French alter ego.
Yes. Where does the surname Lemon come from? It's quite unusual, isn't it?
Oh, gosh. Do you know what? I actually don't know. As far as I'm aware, it's English origins, because as far as I've managed to trace back, we're all English. But yeah, I don't know. One day I'll actually go through that properly. Maybe when Otis is older, we'll both do that together.
Yes.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about grief. And it's something that you talk about a lot on your podcast, in the media. And it still feels like it's such a taboo subject. It's like we're really scared of talking about it. And we don't know what to say to someone who's lost somebody that is near to them. Why do you think that it's still an area that we, so many of us, struggle to talk about?
I think it's a generational thing. Thinking about it lately, it's something that maybe our parents didn't talk to us about, or if somebody died, then you weren't maybe invited to the funeral, and so it was something that was always a bit shielded. I know from my own experience, I guess, up until the point of my dad dying, I wasn't really fully aware, of it. And so, yeah, I guess in a way it could be a generational thing, which might be a great time for us all to start changing that. But yeah,
that's such a good point, though. I mean, yeah, just thinking back to my own childhood when like grandparents died, I wasn't invited to the funerals of all of them, and it definitely was this almost like hushed up thing, and it wasn't an open conversation. It was definitely, we don't talk about that. So yeah, you're so right. And It does feel like things are changing a little bit, but it still feels like something that so many of us feel awkward about, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it's a really difficult subject. And it's one that I think sometimes if people sort of do talk about it, then they're like, oh, gosh, it's a bit like a disease. You'll catch it, you know, and someone will die. But, you know, however uncomfortable it is, we're all going to be touched by it at some point in our lives, whether we're younger or older or, you know, whatever age we are. So I think it feels like there is that sort of, using the word awakening, but, you know, in a strange way, I think people are sort of becoming more aware of the conversation and just feeling more confident to sit in that conversation, that feeling.
And I guess it's probably, I mean, you tell me, you're much more of an expert than I am, but it's probably all linked into our mental health. And that is something that we're all talking about a lot more these days too, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think as well over the last couple of years with the whole conversation around mental health and opening up, you know, I guess essentially feelings, you know, and grief hasn't been a predominant conversation in and around the mental health, I guess, movement over the last couple of years. But, you know, I always say that, you know, if not treated at an early age, a child can suffer from mental health later on in life, and so can adults. So I think that, yeah, that's why I wanted to set up my own sort of conversation and podcast to continue the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. So are you happy to tell me about your dad's death and what happened and what kind of led you to be having this conversation?
Yeah. So when I was 12 years old, my dad was murdered. However many times I say it, it's never easy, obviously. But 12th of May, I was sat in my class and it was about 3 o'clock. And one of the teachers came in and I saw them whisper to the other teacher and sort of come over to me and said, oh, your mum wants you to go home. And I thought it was really weird because the bell rang at 3:15. So I went to get my bike and then realised when I got to the bike sheds that my friend had actually locked his bike up to mine. So I had to run back to the classroom. He came back with me and then it was really weird. It was a bit like a horse out of the gate. I just felt like gone, you know, just cycle home. But I didn't really feel anything. It was really weird. I sort of remember pinching myself and something felt wrong. And so I got home to our close and I sort of saw a couple of police cars in the close where we lived. And as I got closer to the house, I could hear like my sister crying in the front living room and look through the window into the living room and I could see police officers and strange people. And then, yeah, I went into the kitchen and my aunt said, oh, your mum wants to see you upstairs. And I remember just going into the spare room. And my mum just sort of told me and... Guys, it's funny, actually. Whenever I talk about this, this is always the bit that gets me because it takes you back to that moment. And she just said, Dad died this morning. And I remember sort of holding her and for about a minute and I just left. I had to get out of the house. It was too strange, too surreal. And I just jumped on my bike and went straight back to school and immediately saw one of my friends whose dad died a couple of years previously from, I think it was cancer. And I just dropped to my knees. And at that point, everyone was coming out of school. So it was, you know, I was quite visual, I guess, to everybody. And actually, while I was going up to the gates, I saw a couple of my friends as I was cycling up. And they were like, you're all right, you're white, you know, like that. And I didn't even say anything. And then the teachers came and got me and took me into school. And and then that evening, because I went back to a friend's house after school and I went back home in the evening and I remember my uncle sort of sitting me down and just sort of telling me, not in detail, but I guess how my dad had died. And from that moment, my life sort of changed forever.
And I mean, how did you get through that? Were you 12, did you say, when it happened?
Yeah.
You know, what kind of support network did you have? And, you know, how did you even begin to process that kind of thing happening to you?
Gosh, you know, I mean, back then it was 1992 and there weren't really any children's bereavement charities like there are now. You know, Children are really fortunate now to have so many fantastic charities, but there was Cruise, who essentially were just a generic sort of counselling. And they wanted me to be counselled straight away, but it was just too soon. And so I think through my sort of the first, because that was in sort of, it was in May, so I was sort of nearing the end of my, I think it was the first year in secondary school. So, you know, I was supported and they tried to give me counselling and even in school, but it was just a bit too soon, really. It just, you know, my mum was great, but essentially my sisters kind of got on with their own grief and got on with it in their own way, which, you know, I always kind of say, and I talk about it all the time, how, you know, the best way is to just share your emotions and your grief, you know, at a time that's right for you. And so I guess at times I felt isolated, and which probably led to why I didn't talk about it for many years.
So did you not talk about it with family members and friends? Was it something that you bottled up?
Yeah, I think I did bottle it up, and it kind of turned into, you know, anger, frustration. Because when you think about it, I was a 12-year-old boy becoming, you know, teenage years, just started secondary school. And so, you know, I always say that kind of school or secondary school for me was in a sense a write-off, because I'd lost my role model and someone that I could go to for advice, and you know, I didn't really see sort of much sense in a lot of things. So it took me a few years to kind of, I guess, get to a point where I felt comfortable with sharing how I felt.
And how long do you think it affected you for? I mean, you said that, you know, you were bottling up and, you know, going into your teenage years. Do you think that it, in terms of the kind of person that you were growing into, how much of an impact do you think it had on that?
Yeah, I think it had a huge effect on the person I was growing into. And I think, I don't know, I think I've always been very fortunate. I felt like I've been pushed and driven, whatever it might have been, whether it's, I don't know, I'm not hugely spiritual, but I believe in a higher power in a sense. And so I could have gone down a totally different path. And so when I left school, I sort of, you know, I got part-time jobs and things like that. And then eventually I just kind of, I didn't have that feeling of sort of vengeance towards the man that I thought I might have done. And so I think in a way I'd allowed myself to kind of let go of that emotion, which thankfully helped me in the long run.
Yeah. What happened to him in the end? Was he charged and...
Yeah.
And what happened?
So he was charged, but he only got 4 years.
Right.
And I found out that he had... that he was out of prison through a documentary that the other family, his family, decided to do or run. And my mum didn't want to be a part of it, but it was on Channel 4. And...
Why?
Yeah, and I was upstairs and I watched it with my friends and I knew it was going to be on, but I didn't know that he was out of prison. And then at the end, he's like, oh, Roger Carr, yeah, so da, 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 da. He's now out of prison now. And I was like, okay, right. I went downstairs and I was cross. I was like, Mum, why didn't you tell me? But she, you know, there was obvious reasons why she didn't. And so she was trying to protect me. And so, yeah, he only had 4 years, and then from where he went from there, I don't know. But I do know that I think it was around 2006, maybe, I found out that he was working in an Asda in Cambridge, where obviously I'm from. And I called the police. I said, do you do realise that you've got a murderer working in one of your supermarkets? And they were like, well, sir, you know, I do appreciate your feelings and da 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 da, but you know, he, in our eyes, he served his time, and you know, it's what, 12 years gone and all this stuff. I was like, okay, you know, fine. But so yeah, he didn't get long.
And just to explain, it was all to do with a lady who was a family friend of yours, wasn't it? He was the husband.
Yeah. So he was, they were sort of at the end of their marriage, and she was a cleaner of ours, and she was also became a friend of the family, and she was going through this very sort of turbulent end of the relationship, and he would check her mail to see if she was having affairs and things like that. And so in the end, she got her post directed to our house. And so my dad and my mum would take the post to her if at a house that she was cleaning at, or give it to her when she came to ours. And so, yeah, he followed my dad, or followed her to a house that she was cleaning at one day. And then my dad went there to give her the post, and they were in the kitchen having a coffee. And he saw my dad's car outside, and, you know, thought he'd put two and two together, went to a local shop and stole a boning knife. And then he went back to the house, and they had like an altercation or a fight. And my dad, by all accounts, got the better of him, went to get his briefcase, and the man pulled out this knife and stabbed him. And then he turned around and stabbed him another 15 times. And then turned on his wife, stabbed her twice, and she managed to get out of the house. So yeah, it was like a jealous rage. But I think he only got the short amount of time in prison because he pleaded, I don't know what they plead, but it was something, insanity, or whatever these things are.
Yeah. You know, when you're asked to talk about this, do you think that retelling the story helps you in some way? Or do you think that it's unhelpful because actually what I'm asking you to do is relive a trauma?
Yeah, it's helpful, I think. I've been interviewed before on my own podcast about it, and like, you know, like just now by speaking about it and taking me back to that moment, you know, it's amazing how the trauma does resurface. And you could be going through your life and you're, you know, 41 years old, and you know, and you think, oh, I'm fine. And that is the thing with grief. You kind of can catch you off guard so easily. And I think for many years, and I think that's why leading up to recently sort of talking about it and being so open about it was because I felt like, oh, that happened ages ago. It can't affect me anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of made me realize that there are so many people out there that are still struggling, that went through a childhood trauma, who, you know, have experienced loss, but yet they feel, because of the whole stigma based in this country, that, well, you know, if it's more than 2 years, then you should be moving on now in your life. No, it doesn't work like that. It's something that you struggle with for the rest of your life, you know. And I think, you know, that's the other hurdle that we need to get over, and that sort of stigma of, unfortunately, you know, when somebody does go through something like that, at whatever age, it's going to affect you, and you're always going to be reminded of certain things, whether it's birthdays, Christmas, you know, key dates across the year.
So what are the tools that you have learned over the years to cope with those really hard moments?
Yeah, I think it's funny because it changes so often, you know. Say, for instance, this year, I mean, my wife's brilliant with sort of recognizing when my mood has changed, or if an anniversary is coming up. You know, specifically on the 12th of May normally is when I guess I go a bit in on myself and all that stuff. But this year we the kids, I mean, it was really special because I got the kids involved, and because Thea's 5 and Otis is 9, so we got them to write a little note on, and then tied it to a balloon, and we let them go, you know. And we went up to this hill, and actually we stood next to the tree that inspired me to write The Magical Wood. Everything about that moment was incredible, because it was a new thing. It was introducing it to the kids and sort of bringing that conversation and making that day relevant with my children and my wife. And so to see those balloons, because it was funny, they started to raise off the ground, and at first the paper was too heavy, so we had to like tear bits off, and one of them got caught in the tree. I think it was Thea's one got caught in the tree, and then Otis's one slowly started to rise off the ground, and just as his got to a certain height, Thea's one released from the tree, and they both went off up into the sky. And it was such an incredible moment and powerful moment for me personally, and it kind of signified quite a lot, actually. And it was a bit of letting go, but it was also to always, to never forget, I guess, yeah. You know, his memory, his legacy, his life, him, and how I sort of see my dad through my children's eyes in a way.
Yeah. So is that the first time that you'd chatted to your kids about it, or is it something they've always kind of been aware of?
Yeah, I mean, over the last couple of years, I think because mainly, you know, so it kind of kicked off over the few years ago, really, when I wrote an article for The Guardian. And that seemed to be the starting point with everything over the last few years with my grief. Because for a very long time, I wouldn't talk about it, and I hadn't publicly shared it, even with my friends, like close friends. And so I wrote this two-page spread for The Guardian, and this guy came to take photos of us as a family, and the kids were obviously going, you know, what's this for? Why are we taking these photos? And I was like, well, you know, Dad's written an article about Grandpa. And so from that point, it was quite good in a way, because it sort of opened up the conversation just to at least keep him relevant, and made me feel a bit more comfortable with, you know, just as using examples of, if Otis can't sleep at night, I'm like, oh, Grandpa used to tell me this, or get me to do this, or lie on your front, or things like that. And so it kind of little things to keep him relevant in our conversations. And so, yeah, and what with writing The Magical Word and just sort of involving the kids and yeah, and I think that's what a lot of people, I think that's the best way that we can do it, really, is just slowly bring in the conversation around death, around grief. And so, yeah, this year was a really sort of a lovely way of marking that moment. And we also, like, in the morning made pancakes, and Otis was like, God, there's an empty chair next to you, Dad. Maybe that could be Grandpa's chair,
aww,
you know.
And, that's so nice.
And I was like, yeah, maybe it could. That's, yeah, it's yeah. Really, you know.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Yeah.
So tell me a bit more about the books that you've written, because, you know, obviously talking to kids about death can be hard, and it's also something that some kids can get a little bit obsessed with, not always in a worrying way, but just in a curious, like asking loads of questions, because it's quite a weird concept for them to get their head around, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. And I mean, it was difficult. When I came up with the idea of writing a book about bereavement for children, I mean, it felt like a natural next step, but it was difficult, you know. When you're thinking about a storyline that can actually sit well with children and, you know, like you say, it won't scare them. And I did a bit of research with other books out there that have been written to do with the subject. And, you know, like anything, you need to kind of look at the do's and the don'ts and things that have worked and things that haven't. And also I went to Winston's Wish, the children's bereavement charity that I guess essentially wrote the book for, but I'm also an ambassador for. And I, you know, and I picked their brains in terms of, you know, terminology, like saying death instead of passed away, you know, because at least children have a slightly better idea about what's happened if passed away or goes to sleep or in the stars. It can be a little bit confusing. So yeah, that's when I kind of thought about the magical word and the concept and how to bring in an idea that would hopefully sit well with a child who's suffering from bereavement, but also for children that haven't experienced it yet. You know, bringing in a concept that also reminds you that they're always with you when they're gone.
Yeah.
They're always around us, that, you know, they're in the breeze through the leaves, you know, things like that, sort of words in the book that I try to include, that would, it's quite a visual, and it's also hopefully something that, you know, sort of helps children as well.
Yeah, I guess it offers some comfort, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Think of them in that way.
Yeah.
And how do you think that your dad's death has affected the kind of dad that you are to your kids?
Oh, God, yeah. That's funny. I always ask this one.
Do you?
Well, you know, it's, when someone dies, it alters your life forever, and also your mindset about things. So it's such a huge question. But do you know what? When I had Otis and I was in that hospital at, 20 to 5 in the morning, and I remember going into, Simone had to go into sort of the theatre, and I remember coming out of that all gowned up, walking into the room with Simone's mum and her sister, and I just burst into tears. But that, it was more than the fact that I was now a dad. It was more that I could now channel all the love, all the emotion that I had from my dad into my child. Mm. And I think just to not take things for granted, you know, just enjoy the time that we have with our children at the age that they are. Because I know full well, and more so for my sister, I think about her a lot because she was 8 years old when my dad died, how you just never know. And so when you're, however, it's pretty hard, but when you're shouting at your kids because they're shouting at each other or because they've just took that 100th snack from the cupboard, you know, I just try and switch out of that and just remind myself that they're not going to be doing this forever. And
oh, that's so hard though, isn't it? Because all that stuff, all that day-to-day, you know, trying to teach your kids right from wrong, and
you can't
you know, have a go at them for doing something dangerous, for example, just because you think, oh, well, they might not be here tomorrow, or I might not be here tomorrow.
Oh, no, I don't get me wrong, there is that fine line, and I try to I have to be reminded often to, you know, maybe not be so firm. But I think it's just trying to be conscious in my own head of, you know, just enjoying these special moments and just enjoy being a parent, enjoy being a dad, because my dad only had it for 12 years. And and so I think if anything, it's done that. it's such a special thing being a dad, and you know, I think like a lot of parents out there, you could sort of, you see them when they're asleep and you're like, wow, how special is it that we've created these human beings, and we've,
it's
got
amazing.
These. Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. And actually, yeah, you're right. Being able to, you know, really focus on that rather than the kind of moments where you want to tear your hair out with frustration.
Yeah.
That's a good thing, right?
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I heard you talk about how the coronavirus pandemic has made lots of grief kind of bubble to the surface. Has it been quite a tricky time for you, do you think? Is it because it's given you almost like time and space to be thinking about things and dwelling on things?
Yeah, I think it is that. And it's also the fact of, you know, how the coronavirus has taken hold of so many people, mm-hmm. and how I think if anything, it kind of resurfaced a lot of my own sort of mental health problems through grief initially, because I was just, you know, I was like, gosh, what if I get the coronavirus? What if I died? What if I left Simone, just her with the kids? What if, you know, what if?
Do you have health anxieties based around that anyway?
Well, I did. I think I did. And I think, because I was listening to the news like anybody, I was, you know, we had the radio on, the news would come on, you'd be listening to it. And then one day I looked at Simone and I was like, we're just turning this off now.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to the news. We turned the radio off when we were in the car with the kids. I don't watch the news on the TV. If there's anything that I really need to know, about, I'm in lots of WhatsApp chats that will be more than happy to let me know. I kind of quickly realised that it wasn't doing myself any favours. But yeah, it kind of, in a way, it sort of pushed me to start recording again with the podcast and talking to others about grief and the anxiety that it's sort of creating in a lot of other people, because there are a lot of bereaved people out there. People, you know, I interviewed someone this week whose granddad died, and you know, that I think it was only the mum that maybe could go to the funeral. And it's just really sad how a lot of people, you know, whereas before so many people could go and pay their respects, but now it's just a totally a different way of doing this. So
yeah, I mean, hard enough anyway, but even more hard when you feel like you can't properly say goodbye to a loved one. And also, I've heard quite a few people chat recently about how they feel that they've experienced some kind of grief during lockdown. What's your view on that as someone who's experienced true grief?
See, I was contacted by someone that I'm friends with on Instagram, and she has experienced grief herself, and she was like, Mark, what do you think of this? You know, there's so many people out there saying, oh, I'm grieving for, you know, the life that once was and all of this. And I was like, well, yeah, I get you. And then after a bit of a thought about it, I was like, okay, I do understand where these people are coming from, in the sense of, if you've never experienced grief in the way that, say, you know, if somebody dies, then it is a form of grief and it can be that feeling of grief. So I sort of took a slight U-turn on that. But at the same time, you won't necessarily know what that feels like until somebody that you love actually does die. And it's no longer here on this earth.
And it's never coming back. I mean, I guess the point is that our way of life, to a certain extent, is coming back and will be coming back.
Yeah.
So it's not a gone forever scenario, is it?
No, it's not. And I think that's the other thing. It's just reminding people that you are still here. Mm. And do you know what? This is something I try to tell myself every day, is that you woke up this morning, you know, you came downstairs and you had a coffee while everyone's asleep upstairs and enjoyed that quiet time, that moment. And there are so many people out there that won't be able to do that again. So, yeah, you can grieve for the world that you once knew, but why not try and embrace the positive, you know, from everything that's been happening?
Yeah, I think that's a really wise way of looking at it. Now, you mentioned before that you have a bit of a role as a bereavement ambassador with Winston's Wish. What does that involve and how did you get involved with that?
Yeah, so it was a few years ago and I was looking for a charity to get involved in. Somebody that I was working with found Winston's Wish, and they're based in Cheltenham, so it's not too far from me in Bristol. And you know, I had a look on their website and did some investigating, and it was just perfect. So I started to raise proceeds through book sales, and I went over there and I gave them a check, and you know, and then it kind of continued. The relationship continued, and raised a bit more money for them. And then I think it was last year that they actually contacted me and said, well, we would love for you to be an official ambassador. And you know, I was proud to do that and take on that role. So I guess essentially is kind of helping them spread the word, which is, you know, what I've been doing with the podcast, because it's in support of Winston's Wish. So if I'm contacted by anyone who is bereaved or they're struggling to find any resources, then you know, Winston's Wish would be my first sort of point of contact. So yeah, it's a fantastic charity.
And through doing your podcast, I mean, one of the many things that I love about doing my podcast is that the conversations I have with people, quite often I will leave that conversation and a few things will stick in my head, and it will really, I guess, change my outlook on something or make me really think about something differently. Is there anything that you've learned through all the conversations that you've had with people about their grief? Anything that you have taken away from those conversations that's helped you?
Yeah, do you know what? If anything, it's kind of made me realise that everybody grieves in their own way and in their own time, and that's okay. And there's no one set formula to grieving someone. It can happen at any point throughout your life and in many different ways. But I think, if anything, it's kind of reassured me that that having a conversation like that is needed. And so from speaking to so many different people, it's kind of really opened my eyes to how grief has many forms, which in a strange way is kind of reassuring. And so that's because at first I was like, well, you know, someone dies, that's how you feel.
Yeah. And also you only got your experience to go on. So
yeah.
It's fair to assume that everyone else experiences it in a similar way.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just been amazing, like you know, to just feel privileged enough to someone to open up to me and tell me their story and share it with, you know, with so many other people. And yeah, it's a really special thing.
Do you find that you get people contacting you to tell you their stories?
Yeah, I do. And you know, again, it's a really powerful thing when you know, like through social media, through Instagram, you know, DMs. Yeah, God, you know, some people they've been through a lot, and I speak to Simone about it. I say, look, I've received this message. What do you think I should do? And she was like, she's always great with putting it back on me. I was like, what do you think you should do? How do you feel about that message? And I was like, well, that's how you should reply. And obviously, if there's any professional help, then I forward them on to the relevant people.
That must be quite a big responsibility, though, and also just quite a big emotional weight that people are coming to you and sharing their own, you know, bereavement stories.
Yeah, it is incredible. And I'm really, in a way, I'm really fortunate. And I think that's why, it just spurs me on to keep talking about it, really. I know I had there was an article in the Daily Mail on the weekend, and there were, do you know what? The thing is, don't read the comments.
Don't read the Daily Mail.
Don't read the Daily Mail. Don't read the Daily Mail, firstly. And I had, you know, this was all done through a third party. So, you know, so the article had come out, and so, you know, oh, this guy, his dad died years ago. Why is he talking about this? Why is he, you know, sending a, do you know what I mean? Stuff like that. Yeah. And I was like, okay, right. So everything we've already talked about of, you know, people experience grief at different points in their life, and everybody is going to experience grief. I was like, well, no, this is, if anything, these comments spur you to keep going.
What advice would you have? I mean, I know that we've talked about how there's no kind of one solution for everybody, but if someone's listening and they have lost somebody and they're finding it really hard to deal with, where can they go? What can they do? What's the kind of, you know, first port of call?
I think firstly, you have to remind yourself to be kind to yourself. And when I say that, it means that how you're feeling right at this point in time is okay. And, you know, if you want to cry, that's fine. If you feel like you're smiling and you feel guilty about it, don't. If you are in a space where you feel like you can talk to somebody, speak to a friend or a family member or someone that you trust, more importantly. And then if you're really struggling, there are lots of fantastic charities out there, like I've said about, you know, there's Winston's Wish, Cruise, Grief Encounter, and lots of great mental health charities as well. So if you're struggling, then don't be afraid to confide in someone about it. But also remember that it's okay to feel this way. It will come, it will go, but you will, throughout time, you will recognize that these feelings and emotions are natural. And yeah, it's shit, but you will get through this. And I think that is the biggest message, really.
Yeah. So where can people find you online if they want to follow you and kind of, you know, hear more from you?
So, yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Mark Lemon Official. I am on Twitter as well as Lemon Drop Books. You can find me on Facebook again as Lemon Drop Books. And, yeah, at the podcast, which is called Grief is My Superpower, which is on Apple and SoundCloud and I'm sure any other places you listen to podcasts.
And your book about bereavement is available to buy from your website, isn't it?
Yeah. So The Magical Wood is available on Lemon Drop Books website, and it's also available on Amazon. You can order it in Waterstones and Foyles. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Mark, thank you so much for being my guest. I feel really honoured that you would talk so openly and share what you've been through, but also talk and, you know, give so much helpful advice for others. So thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me and giving me the space to share my story.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.